without stopping. The first case is United States v. McGavitt, number 20-20575. Thomas.
May it please the court, Lewis Thomas on behalf of appellant George McGavitt. Members of the panel, this case should be reversed because the trial court erred in three respects, as pointed out in our briefs. First, that the sadism and masochistic content enhancement pursuant to 2G1.1 was improperly applied. Second, that the distribution enhancement was improperly applied where there is no transfer of the material between the defendant appellant and any other person. And finally, that the sexual conduct enhancement was improperly applied where the sexual contact did not occur during, in preparation for, or following the actual production of the pornography at issue in this case. Turning to our first point, Your Honor, the only evidence contained in the record concerning the sadism masochistic conduct enhancement is contained in a single paragraph of the PSR. In that paragraph, it describes a single video of approximately 17 seconds involving a 13-year-old female. With regards to the images.
Let me ask you this, because I haven't looked. He pled guilty straight up without a plea agreement, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, so what was in the factual recitation that he pled guilty to relative to the depictions, et cetera, et cetera? I know what you just said about the PSR.
Judge, I would have to take a look at it. And my recollection is that he certainly, as far as the content of what's in the video, we're not in dispute about the facts of that. Whether he induced the complainant in this case to making the videos, we're not in dispute about that. He certainly induced her to produce the videos at issue here.
Now, well, where my question was going, you started by what only there is in the PSR. And because he pled guilty, you know, straight up, ordinarily, you know, there's a factual recitation about the crime, et cetera, that the person embraces in order to enter the plea,
yep,
right?
Of course.
And so my question was just whether or not, you know, what facts did he acknowledge in the guilty plea policy that would properly be something that the judge could take into account in terms of the sentencing, assuming that it was the same person. And so that was just kind of a question, not to be tricky, but just
certainly,
in other words, whether if it's an objective stand, in other words, if the same judge who took the plea is the judge blindfolded from what the person pled guilty to, or were there facts that could be taken into account even by this court if it's an objective standard. You follow what I'm saying? I mean, it may not be anything. It may be innocuous and build into your argument. But that's where, and I ask the same thing, you know, the government when they get up.
I understand, and I'm only relying on my recollection. I don't
got you.
That portion of my record.
Okay.
But I agree with the court's general principle that facts agreed to and the factual basis certainly are available to the court. I can tell you that I know that there was no agreement as far as the application of any guideline that would have been contained in the factual basis.
Okay.
So, with respect to the appropriate standard that this court has applied in the United States versus the Naismith case, which is cited in our briefs and was cited at the trial court level, the Naismith, in pointing out that the language of the...
Well, let me cut to the chase. I know you want to make the argument, but you agree it's an objective standard.
It is.
we look at the video at all to make the determination?
I don't believe that it's necessary for this court or even the trial court at this point, because I think the facts are undisputed as far as what's contained in the video. So I don't believe so.
So if it's an objective standard and we don't need to look at the video, what is your argument as to the parameters of what the judge can take into account in terms of this enhancement? I mean, it's a whopping, you know, enhancement. So what's your best argument? I mean, Nathan says it's an objective standard, but what are you saying is what the reasonable observer should be limited to taking into account?
I think what the court delineated in Naismith was that you cannot take into account the subjective intent of either the defendant or the complainant. So the bright lines, I think, is that the four corners of the either image or the video is all that the court should consider under that standard. So, for example, in this case, there's an allegation that Mr. McGavitt made certain statements to the complainant to induce her to produce the specific video. The court in Naismith said that that's not relevant. The court said that the only thing that is relevant is what is contained in the actual image, whether or not there was coercive statements prior to, following, at any other point. If they don't appear on the image or in the material, then they're not subject to the enhancement.
All right, so in this case, there's no disputing age, et cetera. In this case, the instrument is a hairbrush. So if the district judge concluded that the nature of a hairbrush is such that a reasonable observer could infer pain, why is that reversible error?
I think that it's not only that they could infer it, is that the reasonable observer would under this court's standard. And that's exactly the mistake that our point is on, that the probation office made in this case, and their response is that they could could cause pain, but it's not that it could, it's that it would, and in fact did. Judge, I'd be remiss if I didn't distinguish all the court's cases as far as penetration with objects with a hairbrush. A hairbrush is the most benign object available to a teen, female or male, frankly. They're certainly non-erotic reasons that a person might penetrate themselves with a hairbrush, whether that's the province of a 13-year-old girl. And that's the point that we're trying to make here, is that versus something like a screwdriver or these cases that talk about anal penetration, Your Honor.
Counsel, what do you make of the Arrett case? I mean, it's an unpublished opinion, but it seems to address this very point, and it basically says sadism is sort of per se, for maybe that's not a great word, but is going to be actionable or subject to this enhancement, and masochism would be too. There's no difference between whether there's two people involved or one. Not unpublished authority, but there it is right in our circuit. So does that case not persuade us?
I think, number one, Eric, the discussion of the penetration in that case, it was dicta. In that case...
Well, it's dicta, but I'll stipulate that. It's in the footnotes, and they didn't have to reach the issue, but right. Isn't that the framework? I mean, if you want to establish a bright-line rule, why don't we go with the Eighth Circuit and Starr and Parker and then Eric and just say... this is what it is.
And I think I would submit, Judge, that the Eighth Circuit test is different than what the Fifth Circuit has articulated, in that they are, I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, they're willing to take into account those other considerations, sort of tacit to the production of the video, whereas this court, and not only in recently in Meacham, this court, another panel opinion, discussed the objective standard and basically said that the court has to make some findings that demonstrate that the penetration or whatever at issue is, that did in fact cause the pain.
What about Aaron?
I think Arrett involved, from the government's brief in Arrett, Your Honor, it doesn't actually, it's not stated in the opinion, but in the government's brief, they described the penetration using a sex toy on a, I believe it was 8 to 11-year-old, if I'm recalling correctly. And in that case, I would argue that sex toy is something that's plainly distinguishable from a hairbrush. That's something that would not be ordinarily available to a teenage of any type that was had a responsible parent involved.
But counsel, the footnotes don't talk about all that. It just says there's no difference between masochism and sadism. In other words, we treat them the same way. Isn't that right?
Well, as far as inflicting of pain on another versus the infliction of pain on oneself under the purpose of the sexual release is my understanding of the difference. But I think if the court's trying to make a bright line that any penetration is inherently sadistic or masochistic, I think that that's, for example, even in the definition of, like it's pointed out in the indictment, the sexual, let me pull it up, sexually explicit conduct, for example, distinguishes masturbation even in the statute from sadistic or masochistic conduct. So I think obviously masturbation is contact with the person's genital area, and I think there is a distinction between those two, and they're not necessarily the fact that penetration doesn't necessarily make it sadistic. It would be our position. And
so back to my earlier question, if it's an objective test, then what is it you say that the objective observer, you argue that the objective observer would draw upon the benignness of hairbrush. Is that what you're saying? Because it's benign, you can't, the objective observer could not conclude otherwise? Is that what you're saying?
I especially in, maybe not in every case, but in this particular case, there's nothing about the person's appearance, disposition, other circumstances depicted on the image that give rise to any inference that the person is in pain. Whether it's obviously inappropriate for a person to produce this kind of content and or ask for someone else to produce it, I mean, we're not saying that. But if in isolation, the team, which is what I think the court has to look at here, created this image based on her own whim, it's not any different than because it's certainly associated with Mr. McGavitt. That's not relevant to the inquiry. It's whether this image on its own rises to that level. And so I think if we conflate those two, Mr. McGavitt's already obviously being counted, held accountable for the offensive production and enticement, and that's accounted for in the base offense level. This is adding on. So if we don't separate those two, the image from the circumstances surrounding it, he's going to be accounted for twice. And specifically in this case, there's nothing about the image, or the district court certainly didn't make findings about the image, whether they were going to review them or probation was going to review them or whoever, that supported the fact that there was any pain apparent or inherent in the particular material issue.
So if you won on the first issue, this enhancement, let's just say for the sake of my question that we agreed with you that there's no, you know, per se rule like the Eighth Circuit, but that the nature of this object in and of itself doesn't satisfy the pain. So assuming he won that, his other objections were all plain error. So assuming you won on the first one, lost on the rest of them, what would the bottom line of his sentencing be? I mean, he's got a lot of stuff backed up here, so.
It is, Your Honor. It would change the applicable guidelines. He would be reduced to level 42. It's 360 to life instead of just guideline to life. And so even for a 45-year-old man, the possibility of
some release versus life sentence, I think is real and significant. And the district court would certainly have the life as part of the guidelines. We certainly would recognize that, but 360 to life is materially different in our position.
So his best case scenario would be 360 to life?
If the court only sustained the point one, yes.
As I said, I was just asking as a matter of information in terms of all these different calculations of where he would end up. I'm not saying that's what the court would do, but just because they're part of the business combination. Okay, all right, well, we have your open argument. Thank you for helping. You've reserved your rebuttal time, so let's hear from the government, and we'll look for you when you come back up.
May it please the court, Andrew Sand from the United States of America. Your Honor, to answer your question, the factual basis that he pled to that's relevant to the first issue is can be found on ROA 108, and that states that minor victim one, whose face is visible throughout the video, can be seen inserting the handle of a hairbrush into her vagina. The PSR expounds upon that a little bit, but that is the undisputed basis for application of the sadism enhancement. The government's position is that enhancement was properly applied in this case. That issue, it's on clear error review, which McGavitt concedes. That means that this court should not reverse unless it's left with the firm and definite conviction that a mistake has been made.
But that's the factual findings, right? Not the application of the guideline. Wouldn't that be de novo?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so if the facts are undisputed, I guess the question really is, do those facts lead to the correct application of the guideline? In other words, did the district court apply the right standard? Is that right?
Yes. I think there are a couple of issues here. One is whether the district court applied the right standard. I think it did. McGavitt mischaracterizes this court's holding in Naismith. The focus of Naismith is on the contemporaneousness requirement for the sadism enhancement.
But were there any findings regarding contemporaneous pain?
I don't think contemporaneousness is at issue here.
Well, I think the issue would be whether there was any evidence that the victim suffered pain, emotional or physical. Contemporaneous, whether it's an issue or not, whether the video evidences that, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where are the findings with regard
to that? So, the district court adopted the PSR.
But where are the PSR's findings with regard to that?
The PSR describes this video. It can be found at...
I understand the PSR describes the video, but does the PSR say anything about the victim's pain?
The PSR states that it could cause her physical and emotional pain.
And that's the nub. Is that enough?
The government believes so, Mr. Honor.
Just a possibility. Is that what Naismith says?
So Naismith is all, again, I said, the Naismith is all about the contemporaneousness.
Well, it's not about all that. In Naismith, the victim was asleep.
Yes, Your Honor.
The court said she was asleep, so there was no pain, you know, depicted. So, I mean, on its fact, the victim was asleep. So I don't understand what you're saying. I mean, Naismith just stands for it's an objective inquiry. So I'm not following what you're trying to get out of it. I mean, we agree that it holds that it's an objective standard. In that case, it said the victim was asleep. Otherwise, being asleep, there's no pain depicted. That's what it says.
Yes, Your Honor. What Naismith says is that because she was asleep, her allegation of emotional pain came from after the fact.
Let's back up a step. I want to ask you what I asked counsel opposite. Is it the government's position that the objective observer, well, is it the government's position that viewing the video plus whatever else is there, the victim's statements, the whole nine yards, is part of the inquiry, or is the government's argument that it is objective and viewing her statements or anything else is not part of the calculus?
The government's position is that the objective inquiry includes the context surrounding the creation of the image. But here, I think to win, we don't need that. The video itself, which depicts the minor victim, who is only 12 years old, inserting a hairbrush repeatedly into her vagina, that is just the video itself. That indicates physical pain. That's enough for a basis for the—
Well, you seem to be making a per se argument, are you?
I think the fact that the district court adopted the PSR, it applied the standard to the facts here. I think we don't need to go into whether a per se argument—
Well, counsel, let's back up a step. I get to ask the questions and you get the answer.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay? Let's be real clear here. Not get it twisted.
Yes, Your Honor.
If I ask you a straight up question, I want a straight up answer. Don't tell me what the district court didn't need to do. The reason it's oral argument is to get answers to the question. Okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
I read what the district court said, and I'll give you a chance to explain. Don't duck my question by saying the district court didn't need to do something. I wouldn't be asking a question if I didn't think it was pertinent to the inquiry. I'm trying to zone in on exactly what the government's position in the case. I know you want to win, but I'm trying to find out. We don't have a case that's on all fours with this. So I'm trying to discern from you, is the government urging an objective test that does not take into account looking at the video, victim statements, or not, or are you arguing for a standard that all of the above is part of the calculus? I mean, that's a straightforward question.
Yes, Your Honor. The government's position is for the second one.
Okay. So what of our case law gets you there?
Yes, Your Honor. So some of the previous cases prior to Naismith have looked at the context surrounding the creation of the image, in particular, Como. The district court relied on the victim's trial testimony that she had been humiliated, and that was enough. That was outside of the creation of the image.
Well, in this case, if we were to take into account the victim's statement, is there any, it's the question Judge Wilson has asked you twice, is there anything fact found by the district court or otherwise that connotes pain?
Yes, Your Honor, the district court did not make a specific finding as to what connoted pain. However, there is basis in the record for that, especially emotional pain. This video, it was not made for minor victim one for herself. It was made in the context of her sexual coercive relationship with McGavitt. I direct the court's attention to her letter, which was read to the district court at ROA 131 through 38. And she talks about the creation of images. She talks about how she can't count the number of pictures that he wanted her to send or the number of videos. And then after that, she talks about an eerily similar instance where she talks about how she'll never forget the night that she was supposed to put a butter knife in an area that she won't mention because he said that she had been a bad girl. She talks about how all of this left her isolated, depressed, and suicidal, how she mentally and emotionally shut down, and how she slit her wrists and she cut her legs over 40 times in one night. That's all indication of emotional and physical pain associated with that relationship.
But associated with the relationship, I think Naismith requires more because it's got to be related to the video and contemporaneous with the video. So, I mean, is it the position of the government that an implied finding that, yes, this video came with pain enough?
I believe so, Your Honor. But again, I think the video itself, just showing the act of insertion by a hairbrush into a 12-year-old girl, that's enough to get you there just based on physical pain.
Does that mean the government's endorsing the absolute rule of penetration?
The government doesn't need an absolute rule on penetration, but I think just the government's position would be that we should look at the facts of the case. There might be instances where penetration or self-penetration might not evoke physical or emotional pain. I'm hard-pressed to kind of think.
The question is what it's visually depicted, as my colleagues have pointed out a couple of times in their questioning to you. once you, maybe this, the law should engage in this kind of an assistance, but what it asks is the whether or not it says that the enhancement is based upon the fact whether or not this particular depiction itself demonstrates the pain or evidences pain or not. In other words, that's the focus of the law. And if you drop off of that and go into all the other considerations, you may be just doubling up on similar conduct for enhancing, among other things. So I might have a little difficulty in tracking the government's argument here.
Yes, Your Honor. So our position would be that the video itself, just the depiction of the insertion of the hairbrush, for this victim, a 12-year-old girl.
The person looking at it objectively know nothing else about it other than that it's the picture. Now, what do you say to that?
We say that that evokes physical pain on her. She is experiencing physical pain. An outside observer would think that she is experiencing physical pain, and that's enough for the sadism enhancement here.
Let's suggest that that's kind of in the eyes of the beholder where they are not, she is.
Sorry, Your Honor.
That sounds like it's still in the eyes of the beholder whether or not she's experiencing pain. In other words, you can exclude the experiences that she had, but you substitute for them the experiences of the viewer.
Yes, Your Honor, that is the standard laid out in Naismith, which requires an objective outside observer's viewpoint of that. You're not supposed to take into account the viewpoint of the defendant.
But that brings a level of uncertainty and lack of uniformity that is not welcome in this context of enhancements where you're already punishing conduct out of the same set of operative facts, essentially. You isolate this one particular one. If you don't narrow it to the confines of that, then you are at risk of doubling up on, you're enhancing twice the same conduct.
I think in this context, it's hard to draw a bright line rule, a per se rule saying, you know, every type of self-penetration is per se sadistic. I think there are instances where it
Let me just try it this way. Based on your argument, it sounds to me like that you really are taking the bright line rule that in these circumstances, looking at this, that we will at least presume, in the absence of something else, that there is pain involved. And the objective test that my colleague suggested to you at the outset was also part of the array.
I think at least for kind of similar images, you know, involving a girl this young, involving that size of an object that she's inserting into herself, we would argue that all images similar to that should be sadistic. And I think I would at least point this court's attention to Comeau. The argument that the defendant makes here is similar to the argument that was rejected in that case. There, the defendant argued that there's no pain associated with an image because he was having oral sex with his 10-year-old daughter. And the court rejected that argument. It upheld the sadism enhancement, and then it stated that it declined to descend into the abyss of deciding where or whether a line could be drawn, delineating which types of penetration are per se sadistic or violent.
It sounds an awful lot like you're drifting toward the same phenomenon we have with obscenity. I know it when I see it, and the whole write-up processes before the court that produced.
Yes, Your Honor, I think, just to clarify on that, I think it would be more about the district court knows it when it sees it. And again, I think, just to remind this court, at least for this issue, we are on clear error review for their determination of the image itself, whether it is sadistic.
But the district court knows it when it sees it. The problem goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I don't see in the PSR or in the district court's findings where it saw it or didn't, specific to the contemporaneous pain. if it is the district court knows it when it sees it, I'm not sold on that. But if it is, then shouldn't that mean the district court has to make a finding about that?
Your Honor, yes, you're correct. The district court didn't make an explicit finding, but I think by adopting the PSR, there was a description there.
But it's implicit regarding the point of pain. In other words, the PSR nobody seems to have shown their work here.
Yes.
The PSR says there's this and here are the facts, and this is sufficient for the sadism, masochism enhancement to apply. But there's nothing about the subjective view of whether the victim is experiencing pain contemporaneous to the image.
I think there was a little bit of a lack of showing their work here, but you know, this objection was raised below. The PSR, the probation officer addressed it in the addendum PSR. That's where you get the statement that an observer could reasonably determine that there could be physical and emotional pain associated with this image.
But could be isn't, it is.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where do we hit an affirmance on that sliding scale between it's possible, it could be, and the victim experienced pain? How far do we have to get toward the certainty?
Yes, Your Honor. And just to add to that, I think at least at sentencing, this was litigated, and at the very least, I think the district court credited the government's argument that she experienced pain in overruling this objection to this enhancement. Yeah.
But that's just argument.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, you are right. There is a lack of showing the work. There was no explicit finding that there was.
We don't think for a four-level enhancement, there ought to be some parameters of findings or something that the government comes forth with for a four-level enhancement where a person is getting double the amount that it might get for the distribution. I mean, that it should. An inference is all that's needed. Is that, I guess, the government's position is an inference is enough to trigger a four-level enhancement where a person gets double life in prison.
Yes, the government's position is an inference is enough here. I think there are other cases where inferences have been made. Lichtman, in particular, there was a reliance on reasonable inferences.
You said there is enough, but you're reaching past the picture. The whole notion is that this is an offense distinct from the underlying brutal conduct that we all know happened here.
Yes,
and horrendous conduct. All of that has been punished. Now the question is there a distinct element here that we reach for? And that is that a picture that itself is going to be, what is the damage of that picture? It's going to be sold or distributed or whatever. And the answer to that is that you have to focus on that element of it. The fact that all that background fact doesn't really map onto that, does it? It's just you take it out, you move this picture away from this matrix of fact, and here's the picture. This is what's going to be distributed, and that's why they're going to enhance it. But that's the problem. If you move away from some kind of an objective test or not, either it's not there, or you're going to have to suppose it's there.
Yes, Your Honor. I think this enhancement, it's a specific characteristic of the offense that was pled to, and because this offense involved material that portrays sadistic, masochistic conduct or other depictions of violence.
Well, that sounds like an argument for a presumption. A presumption that it meets the distinctiveness that must underlie the escalation of the sentence, or the distinctness of it.
I think at least for the contents of that video itself, and this case's prior holdings that talk about, you know, how the sadism enhancement applies to insertion of foreign objects into the body canals of a child, I think you could easily apply a presumption here.
We'd follow Arendt. I mean, Arrett basically says, well, Naismith applies to masochism like it does to sadism, and in those footnotes, it's dicta. It's not, they don't reach it as a, on the merits. They say that he waived the argument. But, I mean, they basically say the same thing that applies to sadism would equally apply to masochism, and so basically we get into our prior precedent before Naismith that says penetration by two people or one people still involves the enhancement. I mean, is that the government's position?
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
So we should be persuaded by Arrett.
I think Arrett is persuasive. I think that Naismith, it doesn't create a new standard. That standard, the objective standard, was already being applied by this court for the sadism enhancement. And I think prior
to it would just apply to masochism.
Yes, yes, Your Honor. And again, I would direct this court's attention to Lichtman, which is pre-Naismith. But again, they talk about how this court has upheld this enhancement for the insertion of foreign objects into the body canals of a child. In that case in particular, involved a 12-year-old child as well.
All right, Ms. Zane, time's up. we appreciate your argument and your briefing. We'll hear back from Mr. Thomas on rebuttal. Thank you, sir.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Please report. With response to the government's point concerning this court can take in, being allowed to take into account those separate circumstances, I just ask the court to look at the reasoning of Naismith again, and that it starts with the text of the specific enhancement. I think it's relevant to Judge Higginbotham's point earlier that this is a specific type of conduct that we're trying to, that the court's trying to enhance or not. And it talks about portraying depictions. And so whether what happened before or after isn't relevant to the text of portraying a depiction of an image. Your Honor, I didn't have much time to talk about point two, but I'd ask the court consider point two in this case. There's no evidence whatsoever in the record of distribution. I recognize that below, certainly myself, on behalf of the appellant, failed to object to that distribution. But in this case, the indisputable facts are that my client requested that the complainant produce the images, and she sent them to my client. And there was no other movement, transfer, placing on website. There was nothing that the court has traditionally considered as distribution that occurred.
But she sent it. She sent it to him.
Yes.
Where's your case that says that that's not distribution or not sufficient?
I don't have a case out of the Fifth Circuit.
And how's it a plain error that the district court committed?
The text of the distribution statute specifically excludes solicitation from the mere solicitation.
Solicitation means I ask you to do it, but she actually sent it. Is there a distinction?
My argument would be yes. In this case, I mean, there would be no production element that it would exist without the person. I guess it's certainly possible for the individual charged to film the act, him or herself. But in this case, my client was not even in the same state with the complainant at the time that these images were produced. So I guess the fact that she sent them over the internet, I mean, that I just think that that's, I don't want to say what I think. The text of this implies that the defendant himself distributed the images.
And how many times do you have to move it before it rises to the level of distribution?
Well,
you're back to the same kind of awkwardness. Distributed. What you have here is that the extreme edges in application that I suggest to you is driven by the horrendous conduct that underlies this, and that's completely one of the particular conduct that underlies it. So you, each one of these levels of questions are being pushed to their outer limits. We're not here to do distribution. Well, the distribution is just one, just hand it to the perpetrator here. Then that's distribution. It comes back to this question, what rule would you have us apply? That's not distribution. In a large sense, it's the same definitional problem.
I think I understand your point, Judge. The rule that we would ask the court to apply is that when the image does not go from the defendant to either be made available to any other person or to transfer it to any other person, then there is no distribution.
When another person's won, so then
you represent him below?
Yes, I do.
Can I ask why you object to this?
Judge, I'll be frank. It was an oversight. I don't have a good specific reason for the court, so that was
all right.
An error.
Well, the question wasn't meant to embarrass you at all, but we just so often we get these situations, the difference between an objection or not.
Yes.
You know, because we apply a different standard, and I just wondered whether it was a strategic, you know, reason or not. But I certainly didn't ask. But I mean, often we don't have counsel here to represent the person below, so you know, sort of get at what you get. But I was just wondering, given the potency of the argument you just made to us, whether there was a strategic reason, you know, for not raising it. But that, you know, clarifies. I much prefer when we have people here that handle it below, so we get a better sense on it. So, anyway, I think we have your points on the other issues and understand your argument on the enhancement. So we'll deem the case submitted and we'll work it out as best we can.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Sand.